Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, listeners. This is Patty Black, and I am back bringing the Good News Show to you. This morning, we're going to have a very exciting show. Our special guest, Pilar, will be on with us. And Pilar is living her passion, fulfilling her dreams, and just making her life large. So we're going to have a great interview with her. She'll be on in a couple of minutes. And I just want to remind you, listeners, that the Good News Show was designed to bring good news, positive stories, and healthy lifestyle tips. And it's really to keep everybody on a positive vibration. So we want to thank you for your support and all of your emails and correspondence. And we do encourage you to send more emails to goodnewsshow@yahoo.com. That's goodnewsshow@yahoo.com, and let us know how you're feeling. Let us know what you want to hear about, and if you have a special guest you want us to bring on the show, just let us know, and we'll do our best to get them here. So I am on air with Sherry. Sherry, are you here?
I'm here. Good morning, everybody, and good morning, listeners. It's great to be here this morning. We have a really great show planned for you, and as Patty was saying, we are thanking you for sending in the five-star
ratings.
Every time this whole year, and it's been great, and we thank you for the emails that you're sending in, and we have a great show today. Do we have Pilar on today?
No, not yet.
She should be on
in a couple of minutes.
We were going to be talking a lot with Pilar about how she has created the life of her dreams, and I find that you'll really enjoy listening to her. She has quite a story and a great life that she's designed for herself.
Well, it's really interesting, Sherry, because when we had the Living Large series last year, it was really designed to help one find their purpose and actually fulfill their passion by living through their purpose. And you know, it's life-changing. It really changes one's life, and they're just living in bliss. So, you know, I believe Pilar has been able to conquer what the whole Living Large series was designed to give somebody, and it's going to be really great fun having her on the show and hearing all of the exciting things that she's doing.
Well, you know, change is good. Change is something that happens all the time. So, you know, it's a good thing. It's part of life, and it happens to everybody. So. I'm really excited. The change is an opportunity to grow, and it always means that something good is around the corner.
So I think we have Pilar on with us. Good morning. Welcome to the Good News Show.
Good morning.
Good morning, Pilar. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi. We're very excited to have you on the show this morning. We know that you're living your passion. You've done many things in the community, and it's just very exciting to have you here so you can share it with our listeners. Thank you.
We were just talking before you came on, because we did a series called the Living Large series, and we feel that you are living what we've talked about. And we wanted to bring that to our listeners so that they can hear from you. So would you tell us a little bit about your beginnings and how you found and decided to do what you're doing?
Well, I grew up in New York, and I grew up basically listening to a lot of music in my household. Both my parents are from Colombia, South America, so I grew up listening to Latin music, and my father was very musical, even though he was an eye doctor, and so we grew up listening to Broadway shows and going to Broadway shows, since we were lucky enough to live in New York. And so I heard all the musicals, and I was just thinking about a song. My mother had an album, Bill Haley and the Comets, Rock Around the Clock, which I used to love to listen to all the time when I was a kid.
I remember that one.
And And I think really from a very early age, from when I was in kindergarten, first grade, I was playing the violin, I was playing the piano, I actually have a funny story about the violin because I had a violin teacher named Dr. Ma, and my mother still has a recording of us, and it's absolutely horrendous because we're three or four of us are trying to play Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, and it just sounds horrendous. You know, I was 6 years old. I had no idea. But there was one time we played with Dr. Ma's son, who I think came to sort of help us out because we just sounded so horrible, and he came to a recital one Monday. And that son grew up to be Yo-Yo Ma. So it's kind of fun that I can say that I played with Yo-Yo Ma, even though I had no idea what I was doing.
But, oh, that's great.
Yeah, but anyway, so I grew up basically participating in school plays. When I was a kid, I played an angel. I played the innkeeper's wife. And that just translated into this passion for acting. I actually connected with someone on Facebook who I hadn't spoken to in 30 years, and she wrote me saying that she remembered how when I was 15, I wanted to be an actress, and I just thought, wow, my vision was so clear, and I don't even remember that, but I just remember being very passionate about being on stage. So, when I went to college, I took all the courses, and for some reason I had decided I wanted to go into diplomacy, and I joined the swim team my first semester, and I got an inner ear infection, and as a result of that, I had to stop swimming, and so I decided instead to try out for the play Winter Term. They were doing Twelfth Night, and I got cast as Festy in Twelfth Night, and it was just like a love affair. It was like, oh, I'm here. This is what I want to do. So I became a theater major, and I studied all the basics from, you know, the Greek theater, Shakespeare, Chekhov, all the contemporary playwrights, learned how to build a set, how to draft, makeup, costumes. I even directed a play when I was in college. I was in all the plays. And when I got out of college, I got veered off a little bit because I was sort of told that I needed to have a serious job. So I went and I did the 9-to-5 thing, and still kept with the dream. And that's something that's really been a constant my whole life. I kept taking acting classes. I kept studying, reading books, going to see plays, and for me, the biggest sign of when I have not been happy in my life is when I'm not pursuing my dream. I get something in the pit of my stomach that says, this does not feel right, and it physically would hurt when the years that I did not act or pursue it. In the interim, I kept studying, but I got married and kept auditioning for plays and did some extra work and under five work in New York with the soap operas, kept doing showcases, kept auditioning, and my marriage ended, and then once my marriage ended, I was like, okay, I'm done. I had sort of, it's kind of strange because it was a bit traumatic and the end of my marriage, and I was really at the end of my rope, and I had stopped doing acting for a while at that point. So I went to Colombia, which is where my parents are from, and I went for 3 weeks. And I went to see a tarot card reader, because that's a big thing. People love that stuff down there, and I love it. And this woman did not read my cards. She actually read my cigarette, the way the ashes dropped on the cigarette that I had, that I was supposed to smoke. And I had really stopped doing anything, and in terms of acting, I had just, I was at that time. I had just left a job. I was working for an investment bank as an assistant. I mean, I was just very removed from the world of acting. And completely 180 degrees. And this woman says to me, "You're going to be very famous." And I was like, "What?" You know, and I'm in another country. I'm with my cousins. That's like the last thing I'm thinking of. She said, "Yeah, you're going to be very famous, and you're going to be very famous soon." And it was so strange because I thought, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. I had worked for Nine West in a shoe company for a couple of years before this, and I thought, well, maybe I'll be designing shoes. Who knows? You know, I had no clue as to what she was saying. And so my 3-week vacation in Colombia ended up being a 3-month stay, and came back to New York. And then I decided I wanted to try it. I wanted to try really going there and trying to look for a job. And I read a book that completely changed the way I thought and I think today. It really did change me, which is called The Celestine Prophecy by James Redfield. Mm-hmm. And it just inspired me. And I realized I needed to go down to Colombia. And I didn't really have any idea what I was going to be encountering. So I made my reel from pieces of plays and little short films that I had done in New York, and I went down there, and I had been speaking with some networks down there, and one of them said, "Well, we'd like to see you for a role." So I went down there, and I had to wait because they changed the show format, and down there they have something called telenovelas. And telenovelas last between 9 and 12 months, the filming. And they show it for like about a year. And it's got a beginning, middle, and end. And they show it on primetime. And so about 2 months later, they called me and they said, "We'd like to audition you." So I said, "Great." And I went and I auditioned. And they said, "You're hired. But here's the thing. You're going to be really mean and we're going to make you ugly." And I was like, that's absolutely, I have no problem with that. I was just so happy to have a job. Mm-hmm. And so I started working on this telenovela. And when the telenovela aired, it was really, it was just a phenomenon. And I can't explain it except to say that it was just something that I had nothing to do with. I became literally an overnight sensation. And people would stop me on the street and they would ask me for autographs. And this woman, what she had said to me, you know, less than a year before, it came true. Mm-hmm. And so I worked down in Colombia for 9 years, and kept doing roles because one show would end and then I would start another one immediately. And in the interim, I did a few plays. I did the first Colombian musical. I worked on my singing because I'm also a singer, and I never stopped. And 6 years that I decided to come back to the States. So I have been in Miami for the past almost 6 years pursuing my dream, and I'm still at it.
And doing very well. That's quite a story. So how did you end up in Miami and not go back to New York?
That was a decision which I made because I had lived my whole life in New York, and I wanted to try something besides Bogota and New York, and it seemed like a good halfway point. I have some cousins who live here, and every time I would come to visit them, I was like, I have to live here. It's so beautiful, it's warm, it's sunny, the people are so nice, and the thing about Miami is that it is obviously slower than New York, but I have discovered that there is a rather large theater community, and I have been able to... again, you know, it's a process, as you know, both of you know so well. Nothing comes easy, but I have been able to do pursue my dream and have some really choice roles, which I don't know if I would have had in New York, from plays that originally started off in New York and directors bring them down here. And so being able to explore and to stretch myself as an actor doing these more challenging roles has really been a blessing. So I'm really glad that I made the decision, and I thought about it a lot before I came up, because what happened to me in Columbia is that I kind of reached my ceiling artistically. I sort of kept doing the same thing, and it was great, the money was great, the fame, the blah, 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 but I just sort of felt there was a void in terms of what I wanted to pursue from the inside. And that was my decision to come up to leave and come up to the States. And I thought, well, let me try another city. So that's what brought me to Miami.
Well, it's interesting to hear that even though when you were in the corporate world or, you know, out of the arts world, you felt that you had a feeling in your stomach, and you still felt that there was something, I guess you were feeling there was something missing, or you were on the wrong path. And did that ever go away, or did it go away when you got back into the arts?
Yes, that's exactly what happened. I mean, there were years in which where I didn't practice my craft at all, and I just felt this horrible void and this feeling of, well, maybe I forgot. Maybe I've forgotten how to act. Maybe I really can't do this. And what I discovered when I got back into it is that we have what's called cell memory, for good and for bad. But we don't. Exactly. But our body does not, and our soul, you know, it always has a longing. And so, our soul, our what drives us, is always going to come back to haunt us if we don't pursue it. And I really truly believe that, because I see a lot of people right now who are in the corporate world, and they, you know, they'll share about how they would like to go back to do something, but they're not really sure what. And it's that longing that we all have to discover what is, you know, what it is that we want to give. Because that was something I discovered along the way, is that the only thing that makes me happy is to be doing my craft, but it's to be giving my craft away. When I'm in the get mode, when I'm trying to get something, when I'm trying to get a job, or when I'm trying to get to the audition or whatever, that doesn't work. It only works when I just give of myself. So I have discovered that what makes me happy is when I am giving of a character, giving on stage. And when I'm joyful, then I am I guess it just kind of transmits naturally, and then I get so much energy back from people, which is what, you know, the ideal thing is if you're in, you know, in an audience in theater, is you want to have a communion with people. Mm-hmm. So with the energy that you give out, you also get back, so there's a constant flow. And so that's that longing when I haven't felt it, when I turn away from it because I think, oh, I have to make money, I have to do the worldly things that will keep me afloat. That doesn't work. That makes me ill, you know, spiritually.
Wow. Well, that's interesting. That's I can relate to that on many levels, coming from a music engineering background and studying many years at the university, and then after graduating, you're put out into the world, and it's like, oh, it's like, how do I continue this, or do I do what the corporate, follow the corporate world, which is what you hear those voices, some people think that if you do that, that's being responsible, so.
It's what's expected.
It's expected. It is. Could you tell us about one of your favorite shows that you've done and the experience of that?
Oh, yes. Probably my most favorite show has also been one of my most, probably my most challenging, but not challenging in a sort of I have to lift a heavy load up the hill, but because it is just so wonderful. And if I had to go back, there are some shows I wouldn't go back and do again, but this one is something I would definitely go back and do, which is 2 years ago I had the absolute joy and fortune to be cast at Mosaic Theater, which is a theater in Plantation, Florida, doing a show called Nine Parts of Desire, in which I played nine different roles, and it was a one-woman show, so I was the only woman on stage. And it was about nine people's lives as they encounter situations during the Iraq War of 2000, when it started. So we're talking a period of 2003, 4, 5, around there. I think she wrote it in 2004. But she, the author, the playwright, went and interviewed people for a very long time and interviewed people from different backgrounds, different places. So, for example, there was one woman, a 50-year-old woman, who is living in exile in London, and what her experiences were from when she was a revolutionary. And then there was a woman who was married a doctor who had she had done her medical school training in England, and she had gone back to work in Iraq and seeing all the devastation and the babies who were born deformed from all the gases and stuff during, you know, Hussein's reign, and what she was seeing. And she's married to a person who had gotten his legs chopped off in a skirmish, and then a 10-year-old who has a bullet. She's got a bullet as a chain. She's wearing it on her neck as like a little pendant, and her innocence, and an artist who paints, and all these amazing, rich lives, and basically playing them all out in an hour and a half I still think about that, and it just, the mind reels because I was literally, I had to go from, I would go from one role to the next in basically maybe I had 5 or 10 seconds to change characters. And yeah, exactly. And it was just amazing because I had an amazing director, and that was really, she was my saving grace. Because she knew how to work with me, and I did a lot of research, and I looked at every character very closely, and I had a different walk and a different way of talking for each character. And so it was a phenomenal experience. And something I won't forget anytime soon. And the great thing is that I'm going to be working again at Mosaic Theater. That's my next show that I'm doing. And I'm going to be working with Richard Simon, who is the artistic director. We're doing a play called In Darfur, about the genocide happening there right now. So I'm very excited to immerse myself in that.
Wow, that's going to be beautiful. I wanted to ask you, and maybe you just answered it, but when you're going into a role, do you how do you prepare for it, or is there, what is your, other than knowing your lines and studying, and do you research the character? How do you get yourself ready? And like you said, you're at a moment's notice, within 5 minutes, you're going into another character. What is it in you that you draw from to come out and to be able to do that? I know, being in the hair and makeup field, I've worked with actors that it always surprised me that as soon as they that it said cut and they were going to lunch break, they were able to cut right from character, go to lunch, and be a whole different person. What is it that that does that? Where do you get that? And I don't know,
motivation maybe.
Motivation. Yeah. How do you find that in you to be able to come from different characters and to do the research? Is that something that is just in you, or is it just you're studying to bring that out of you? I don't know. I just wanted to understand that a little more.
Well, something as complex as nine different characters obviously requires a lot of planning. But I the way I approach a role is really like a piece of music. And I know you can relate to this, Pat, as well, because it's like a score. So you have to, you know, when you, I mean, I see when I see hair and makeup artists, when I get to a set, and I'm there, and I've, you know, I've got my hair, and my hair is all scraggly and stuff, and I get to the set, and I see the hair and makeup, and it never ceases to amaze me. They've been there for an hour, and every single brush is perfectly in place, and they know when they're going to, what brush they're going to need next, if they're doing contour or if they're doing shading, and they need to know where to pick it up, because they have to have everything accessible to them, because they have a limited amount of time to get somebody ready. It's the same thing with preparing a character. You have years of experience, obviously, but you have to prepare it, and so you have to know, like in music, you know, the character has certain beats, and there's rhythm, and there's parts where the character speaks more slowly or speaks more quickly or has an emotional moment and needs a pause. And there's so many, I mean, I'm really simplifying this, but there's so many aspects to it. Like the character that I'm about to do, she's pretty complex because she is a complex in terms of what she's dealing with. Because she's in Darfur, she's a reporter for the New York Times, she's half Swedish, half Iranian. And so I have to look at all those aspects. It's not just about me reading the script and memorizing it. It's about me looking into what happened to her up until the moment she walks into the play. And that's called a backstory. So you create a life for this person that doesn't necessarily, you know, it's for you. It's for you as the actor, because I have to play a three-dimensional character. I can't play what's on the page. I have to get that character off of the page and into me. And there are some things I'm going to relate to, and there's some things I won't. So the things that I don't relate to, I go and I research. Like I've never been, I've been interviewed, but I have never, you know, I'm not an interviewer. So I've gone to speak to a reporter. Actually, it's funny because I just spoke to someone this morning who is Swedish. So I was asking her some questions. I have a friend who's from Iran, and so I'm going to be speaking to her. There's a cadence to the way this woman speaks, which is in the page. It's on the page because the playwright has written it a certain way. So I have to bring that into my, I have to put that into my body. I have to put the reporter, the way a reporter is, and I'll make it specific for me, but it's different from the way I am. Because a reporter will, you know, obviously think different from an actress who thinks different from a business person who thinks, you know, everybody's different. So I have to make it very specific for me in order for it to be a fleshed out human being when I get to, you know, opening night. So what I'll do is I'll write like a little biography of her feelings, what she felt, how she got into the business. And it doesn't have to necessarily be, you know, true or not true. This is for me. Mm-hmm. And something that I also always do is I always have a secret. The character always has a secret, which I don't ever tell the director or anybody, but it's a secret for me, for me, the character. And there are certain things that the character doesn't know that the actor has to know. So those are also certain aspects, like of things that happen in the future, because she's not in every scene, obviously, and there are things that happen that she doesn't know about. So there are things that the actor must know that the character doesn't necessarily know that help the character, the way that they act, the way that they react, how they feel about the person that they're speaking to, what's underneath, what's the subtext. You know, they're saying, oh, the sky is blue today. But that person could be very angry at who she's, you know, saying it to. So it's got to, why is she angry? You know, so there are all these aspects that kind of intertwine. So at the moment that my character walks on stage, that I walk on stage, I'm always aware. You know, I don't totally become the character. I mean, I'm always aware because you have to be aware of the audience. But I know which brush to pick up at that moment. mm-hmm. I know what, you know, what I need for that particular moment in the play.
Wow, you just told that so beautifully. Do you feel like when you finish a role, are you able to get right back into yourself, or do you feel like Sybil?
Well, I can tell you after I did 9 parts, I felt a little bit like Sybil. But no, I always have a sort of a coming down off of it, because as much as I am aware, as much as I'm aware that it's a character I'm playing, I'm not that person. I do. They kind of grow in me, you know. So I grow to love the characters, and they grow to be a part of me, and so I carry them around with me. So letting go of them, I mean, I can do it as soon as I get off the stage. I'm done. Although with 9 parts of Desire, actually, almost every time I got off the stage, I was always a little teary-eyed because it was so emotional. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, I'll go about the day of my daily business. You know, it is actors, it is a 9-to-5 job, and you can let go when you're in it. But once you finish a show, for me at least, I have, it's tough. It's tough because it's like I have to let go, because it's something that I created out of nothing, out of words on a page. And so it's like I have to sort of, I have to let that character go away, you know, because it's not a part of me anymore, and it's wonderful because I get to experience that. But it is a little hard at the end. It takes a couple of days, and then, you know, I'm off and I'm doing the next thing. Mm-hmm. But I do cherish all the characters I've ever done, even ones that I don't necessarily like, you know, that are not likable characters, because they're even people that are not very likable. You still see the goodness in them. You still see when they're being, you know, immature brats, and because we all have that in us. You know, that's why when we see something that we don't like in another person, we're just seeing something about us that's reflected back. So, you know, for me, it's really interesting, especially when I play disagreeable characters. It's like I can go, oh, okay, this is the way I can be sometimes. You know, and I can just laugh at it and go, all right, this is fine. You know, this is how not to act. Now I know.
That's the way when you hear about, like, Robert De Niro, when he goes into a role and he stays in character the whole time. You've heard
of
that?
I think film is different. See, because theater, you go and you're there.
And you're done, yeah.
You're there and it's an hour and a half, or it's 2 hours, or it's whatever it is, and you're doing it. I think film is more difficult, and frankly, if I had the characters that he's had to play, I would stay in character all day, because you're basically called on set to work, let's say, a total of an hour out of a 12-hour day. So you'll be called to do a scene, you'll do it for 15 minutes, and you'll go back and you'll sit in your trailer for 4 hours, and then you'll go back out and you'll do another scene for 15 minutes, you'll go and sit in your trailer again. And that's very distracting.
Right.
So, I mean, I've done short films and things where, the time is much shorter, but I think that is something that is very valid, especially for something like, let's say, you know, Frank Langella, Frost Nixon. He talked about how he had to stay in character all day, and I can totally relate to that, because something to play someone of that magnitude and with the force that he played that, I think that would be very difficult
right.
to some people
come
can
in
do
out
it.
Of- Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I'm a good enough actor to be able to jump in and out. I would have to stay in character.
Right. So we had a few emails from some people that wanted to ask you some questions, and one of them is Sarah, and she's from Fort Lauderdale. Says, "How do you handle rejection when you don't get picked for a part? Has it ever happened to you?"
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's like pretty much every day. Well, here's the thing. This is what I've, it's so funny because people ask me that all the time. And what I have, a friend of mine once said to me, you know, acting, auditions are my job, and acting is something I get to do once in a while. Acting is like my hobby. And I have discovered that I used to approach auditions very, I guess, with resistance, and you know, why are they auditioning me? When I first came to Miami, I stopped auditioning when I lived in Colombia because I had a manager who would basically, you know, put me up for the part and I'd get the part. Or I pretty much whenever I auditioned, I would get a part. And so I just was riding high and I never had a problem with that. I get to Miami and I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be great. And, you know, audition after audition after audition, and I don't get a job. And I don't get a job for a year. And I'm like, well, what am I doing wrong? And so I realized that I had to work on my auditioning skills, because auditioning is just as important as the job, because people have exactly 2 minutes to see you. They don't know what they're looking for. And what I learned to do is that I learned to really enjoy it, because I used to look at it as like, why do I have to audition? You know, very, very negatively. And that's what I would bring into the audition room. So the people who are on the other side of the table, they really want to hire someone. They're needing somebody. And you're on the other side going, I need a job. But when you come in with that of saying, oh, I really want this job, I really want this job, you're coming in with lack instead of, I'm going to have a really good time. So what I do before every audition is I pray, basically. I just pray and I say a little prayer and I say, just give me the wherewithal to do my best. Not give me the job. No, I really want this job. No, I want to enjoy myself. I want to give a really good audition. I don't want to get a job, because that's, as we were saying earlier, that's where it never works. Whenever I'm in the get mode, it's a disaster. But when I'm giving, I'm like, let me give a good performance. Let me have a great time. Let me enjoy and have a communion with these other people, mm-hmm. have a connection with them. And so the onus stops being on the audition. It becomes
right.
playful.
Right.
And that's really the that's what's turned it from being a chore into being a joy. So as soon as the audition is over, I go in, I've prepared, because I have to prepare, and that was something I wasn't very good at before. So now I over-prepare. I know the lines if I'm given a script.
And do you ever go in it looking like the character?
Sometimes I do. I did a play about a year ago, and I came in, and I didn't even know this, but I came in exactly as the character was dressed on stage on Broadway, and she was wearing a long black skirt and a beautiful white blouse, and a friend of mine lent it to me. It was a gown, and you don't usually go in like that, wearing that to an audition, but I went in and I got the part. But you have to go in. You can't go in like as a costume. That was really an exception. You go in dressed as, for example, I'm going to go to an audition, and I have to, it says casual but nice. So you wear a pair of nice pants, a nice blouse that registers well on camera.
Mm-hmm.
You make sure the color, you practice this. I've done this, with workshops. Like I'll bring a couple of different, shirts and I'll go up to the man teaching, and I'll say, you know, can I try this? And I'll see what I look like.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's something that I highly recommend to people who are, you know, in going to many auditions, is to see what you look like, how you register. And then I'll do the audition, I'll smile, I'll say thank you. And then as soon as I'm out the door, it's like I leave it there. And that's what they say about, you know, like, and that's what I do with when I'm on a job, when I'm doing a play. And even when I was working in television, all the years that I would work in television, as soon as I took off my clothes and my makeup, I was done.
Right.
And then I leave that audition behind and I don't hang on to it. I send it off, and I've already prayed about it and I've sent it good energy. And if it comes back to me, great. And if it doesn't come back to me, I wasn't supposed to get it in the first place. You know, it really is, you know, what you offer the universe. If you offer the universe abundance, you're going to get it. And you're not going to get it the way you want it. You're going to get it the way you're supposed to get it. And that's,
mm-hmm.
I have no idea what I'm supposed to get. So since I don't know any better, I just, you know, I just I give it away. I say, okay, I did the audition. I'm on to the next thing.
Mm-hmm. That's great. So, Paloa, we have about 6 minutes left, and actually we have quite a few emails that we're going to have you on the show another time. It seems like
cool.
A lot of people are interested. But we do want to know, is there a number or a contact or a website or so somebody could contact you should they need to?
Or at least find out where you're performing.
Well, actually, I have a website which is under construction, and it's www.PilarUribe.com. And the email, if you want to email me, it's Pilar@PilarUribe.com.
Great. So we have a few more minutes, so I'll just go over some of these questions. Carol from Jamaica wrote, do you incorporate meditation in your day?
Always. Always. When I don't meditate, it is disaster. Because, again, I'm in anxiety. I'm in the get mode. When I meditate, and meditation is very simple. Meditation doesn't have to be about oming and aying if you're not experienced. It can just be simply closing your eyes and breathing in and out. And answers come not necessarily when you're meditating, but they come later. Like a little thought will pop into your head and you'll go, oh, what a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
That comes from stilling your mind. That comes from meditating.
That's a great question, too. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, great question.
So I have something we can go over real quickly. It's kind of funny. Someone wrote, at the Academy Award show, when the actors don't get picked and they still clap and smile, they said, I always wonder if that's acting or is that real?
You know, it's interesting. I think it's a combination, honestly.
We only have 2 minutes, so.
Because, of course,
okay.
You want to win. But at the same time, you're happy for your colleagues.
Right.
So it's I think it's a sad and it's a bittersweet occasion.
Right.
A bittersweet. Yeah. Well put. That's well put. Well, Pilar, we have really enjoyed having you on our show. Thank you so much for your time, and we'd love to have you back at some point.
Oh, I'd love to. This is really fun. I had a great time.
And it's always let us know where you're going to be so that we can email it out to all our people so that they'll know where they can find you. Because we've seen you and we love watching you. Wherever you are, we want to be there.
Thank you. And I think you have a great show. I really do. I love your blogs. They're just wonderful. And it's great that you can hear them after the fact, too. You can go back to them. I love that.
Right. And yours will be on, so send all your friends and anybody that wants to hear you will be able to hear you 24/7.
Okay. Oh, dear.
Great. All right. Well, thank you for being with us.
Thank you. And you have a great day.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you, Sherry. Take care.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. So there you have it, listeners. You've been listening to Pilar. What a great show. I'm so glad she was on the show with us this morning. And we want you to stay tuned for our show next Monday morning at 10 a.m. Thank you for listening to the Good News Show.
Thank you, everybody. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.